This is an ABC podcast.
In Pacific politics, power is often hard won. And for the women who get there, it can come at a price.
I was really shocked. When I received the notification, I thought, okay, this is a very personal attack.
Because the closer they get to power, the more vulnerable they become to a very modern form of violence.
Generally, the women do get a lot of cyberbullying, or what we call technology-facilitated violence. And that's bullying as well as shaming people, putting up pictures, naked pictures that might have been taken or private.
And for Fijian politician Linda Tambuya, this nightmare became her reality.
A close associate of mine called me late in the evening, just basically saying, hey, I've seen something online. It's personal and it's spreading quickly.
Hi, I'm Scott Whiteday, and this is Politalk, where we'll take you behind the scenes of Pacific politics and how it affects us. Today, a private video and a political storm. I'll take you into the heart of a scandal in Fiji and the deeper culture of intimidation and cyber abuse that surrounds women in politics across the Pacific. Linda Tambuya is a force to be reckoned with, a lawyer, advocate for women's rights, and ambitious politician.
She's never hidden the fact that her goal was to be the first female prime minister in Fiji.
Romitesh Kant is a PhD candidate at the Australian National University and researches gender in Fijian politics. He says Linda first got into politics in 2014 with Fiji's People's Democratic Party, but failed to win a seat.
In order to get a better chance of getting elected to parliament, she joined the Social Democratic Liberal Party, which was the dominant opposition party in Fiji from 2014 to 2022. And around that time, Sitiveni Rabuka, the current prime minister, was also appointed as the leader of the Sonalpa party. Her campaign was innovative in the sense that she utilized social media quite a lot to her advantage. She appealed a lot to younger people in the urban centers. And women.
4 years later, in 2018, she was elected into parliament as the highest polling woman and as the fifth overall highest polling candidate.
She positioned herself as a dynamic and outspoken leader, which made her a target for political attacks from early on in her career.
Over the years, Linda has faced challenges, being criticized for what she wears and for speaking her mind. Despite this, she rose through the ranks and became the Minister for Women, Children and Social Protection. But on Christmas Eve 2024, Linda Tambuya received a phone call that would upend her life.
A close associate of mine called me late in the evening, just basically saying, hey, I've seen something online. It's personal and it's spreading quickly.
An explicit video of her was circulating online.
I obviously was just suddenly felt a wave of shame, betrayal, and of course anxiety as well. Like, how would this affect me?
It's unclear how the video ended up in the public domain, but Linda says the video was meant for her husband and its circulation online was a criminal invasion of privacy.
I wasn't really even thinking so much about how it would affect me and my profession as a cabinet minister in parliament. I thought it was a very personal attack so that it would affect me personally. My mind was racing and, you know, here I had a very private moment now turned into a public spectacle.
Soon after the video began circulating, Fiji's Prime Minister, Sitiveni Rabuka, asked Linda for an explanation.
I was really shocked. I'm sorry. I was really, really shocked. And I also felt a sense of betrayal.
Linda says she gave the Prime Minister a private explanation, but felt an urgency to address the public as well.
The story or the video was going viral and, I didn't want to hide.
So that night on Christmas Eve, Linda put up a Facebook post saying the circulating video was an invasion of privacy and that it served as a reminder of the challenges women face when it comes to cyber exploitation.
It was so unfortunate that the timing of it, that this was going viral, that this dominated the papers on Christmas Day. You know, I didn't choose that day. It chose me. The attack chose me because it was Christmas Eve.
The reaction from the public was swift and mixed.
I really had overwhelming support for those that messaged me or called me directly. There were many people, especially women, they reached out, and some said, I can't imagine how hard this is. We support you for standing up for yourself. Of course, in terms of, the critique online after I posted, I mean, it was horrendous in terms of the critics that came through. There were a lot of moral judgment, basically questioning, why did I do the video in the first place? Questioning my judgment. It was immoral and that I was risking exposing myself by doing that. And, I understood, though, that not everyone would be sympathetic. I was just bracing for that impact, that I would be, critiqued.
The reaction from Fiji's government was also swift. And on December 26th, Linda was dismissed from her position as Minister for Women, Children and Social Protection.
It was a very short conversation, just basically a very brief notification where he mentioned that I would be dismissed from cabinet. And then, of course, I received the letter after that, basically to formalize the reasons for my dismissal. And, it was basically saying that I had breached the, code of conduct of ministers or members of cabinet. It also talked about me bringing disrepute to the government, bringing disrepute to cabinet and to parliament.
That day, in a statement on Facebook, Prime Minister Rambuka said Linda's dismissal was not one he took lightly and that she would remain a member of parliament. Polytalk has reached out to Mr. Rambuka for comment, but we haven't received a response. However, back in December 2024, Prime Minister Rambuka told the ABC the video had brought his cabinet and party into disrepute, saying that, quote, after considering various codes that we had ascribed to as members of cabinet, Ms. Tambua had acted outside the conduct limits, end of quote. While the Fiji Constitution provides for public officials' professional conduct, there isn't a specific code of conduct for MPs or cabinet ministers.
I was emotional when this happened. It hurt me a lot because I believed that my loyalty and service deserved a lot more understanding.
Under Fiji law, it's an offence to post an intimate visual recording or videos of a person. But for Linda, with how this unfolded, it felt like she was the criminal.
There was absolutely no acknowledgement in that letter that a crime had been committed against me, that I was a victim of a crime. There was absolutely no acknowledgement. It was just, you've broken the code of conduct and you've brought disrepute. It was a absolute missed opportunity to stand up for women and all victims of cyber crimes and cyberbullying when we have some form of law that is here.
As a woman in leadership, Linda is not alone when it comes to being attacked online, cyberbullied, and discredited. The SBC, the Pacific Community, reports that online abuse against women is endemic in the Pacific, and for much of it, perpetrated through abusive text messages, image-based abuse, or controlling a person's access to their phone. This forms part of a barrier for women to enter politics, and Pacific countries have some of the lowest levels of participating women. The latest report from the Inter-Parliamentary Union has found that 60% of women MPs in the Indo-Pacific region have reported gender-based online violence. The report found that violence perpetrated against women was a violation of their human rights and hindered their full participation in political life. Something that Romitesh Kant believes is reflected in what happened to Linda Tambuya.
I wasn't completely surprised by this attack on her because it has been a consistent pattern in Fiji's politics for a long time that women have been attacked, women in politics especially. There's been a history of targeted personal sexualized sort of attacks that seems to suggest that there's a deliberate and coordinated attempt.
Romitesh is a PhD candidate at the Australian National University and a researcher on gender in Fijian politics.
So it was infuriating in the sense that it reinforced how some Fiji's political system is still quite unsafe for women, especially younger women. wanting to get into politics. It shows that how women are still vulnerable within the system, and that character assassination, such as, you know, leaking private videos, is still seen as one of the most effective tools to silence women in politics generally.
Romitesh, how would you characterize this kind of online attack?
Personally, I see it as an example, or it's a textbook case of character assassination, in the sense that this video was a personal video, and the way it was exposed and weaponized, it was meant to humiliate her, to delegitimize her authority. She's a growing political superstar of sorts, you know, and she's quite popular in Fiji. But I think it served a purpose to actually undermine her political career, the rise in her political career.
How have we seen similar incidents like this play out in Fijian politics?
That this is not an isolated event, but it has been part of a broader pattern in Fijian politics specifically, where women's private lives are, you know, disproportionately policed. A case happened in 2019-2020 where a man allegedly and falsely actually alluded to the fact that the then opposition party MP Lenora Giragiran Tabua, that he had access to some private videos, which he was prosecuted for, but it did cause quite a lot of distress for Lenora. So it seems like women, as they're getting more and more popular, or certain women, female politicians, as they're getting popular, there are moves to delegitimize their and undermine their political career.
What strategies have been effective at countering character assassination and gendered violence like this?
I think the most important one for Fiji has been advocacy by civil society organizations. So civil society organizations were quite vocal and have been quite vocal on issues around misogyny in public, misogyny and sexism in public life and public discourse. I think there is a need to hold media to account as well. I think media organizations need training and capacity in the way they, how they recognize, you know, sexism and misogyny, and then how do they report on these issues. And I think we also need, as I mentioned earlier, stronger laws on online harassment, violations of privacy, and political violence, which are gendered in nature. So these, I think, will help to a certain extent. But then I think we also need to change the culture, political culture in Fiji. More and more, I mean, quite a big number of voters in Fiji still have very deeply patriarchal views.
On the issue of patriarchal views, you've described Fiji's political world as very masculine. Can you explain that, and how do traditional gender roles make women more vulnerable to these kinds of attacks?
Like many Pacific Island countries, Fiji's political system is deeply patriarchal. Men are still seen as natural-born leaders. That makes it very difficult for women to assume leadership roles within the political system. We've also had the history of coups in Fiji. We've had multiple coups in Fiji. And this has actually, while it has allowed a space for women to be a bit more proactive in the political system, it has also discouraged or been a disadvantage for women. Because with the political culture, with the coup culture comes this aspect of militarization, where the military has been deeply involved in the coups. So what has happened is that there's been a preference for male military leaders to assume political party positions, leadership positions within political parties and political leadership. Tied to this is also the notion, also the influence of religion. So Fiji, like many Pacific Island states, is deeply, you know, religious society, both in terms of Christianity and Hinduism and Islam. And all these three religions do, in a way, promote, you know, men as natural born leaders and, you know, divine authority given to men. So women traditionally do then face uphill battle, both from cultural, within the cultural realm, but also through religious influences, which is deeply connected to culture as well in Fiji.
How do you think Linda's case will impact Fijian politics moving forward?
Most important, I think, impact is going to be is that women will feel discouraged from joining political parties or wanting to join politics, hearing similar texts. What it has shown is that women are vulnerable and that there is lack of support from within the political institutions itself, from political parties. So they feel like they'll be left alone to deal with this. And I think the case of Linda demonstrates that, where her party was more concerned about its own image as opposed to, you know, protecting one of their own party members, very successful one at that. I think the broader sort of long-term impact of this is that women will be forced to conform to more stricter moral expectations than their male counterparts. They'd be expected to behave in a particular way, to conform, rather than, you know, being authentically who they are in politics as male leaders are.
And how is this being challenged or mitigated in Fiji?
So women's organizations, actually in Linda's case, came out and strongly put out strong statements saying, arguing that, you know, the issue here is, the issue is not the content of the video, but rather the leak in itself, that it should not have happened in the first place. And they were asking for political leaders to actually shift the discourse from, you know, blaming Linda Tambuya to actually addressing the root cause of the problem, which was, you know, an invasion of her privacy. And then they also started, and they have been doing this for a while, but they also then reiterated their call for stronger protections, legal protections, for not just female politicians, but also for women generally.
From Romitesh Kant's perspective, the alleged leaking of Linda's video is not only an attack on her personally and professionally, but an attack on Fijian women across the board. He says what's happened speaks to the double standards between men and women in politics and the patriarchal culture that makes it a challenging, hostile environment for female MPs. But in Fiji, civil society organizations and women's rights groups have stood by Linda Tambuya and have voiced their support for women who have come under attack from online violence. One of these people is Shamima Ali, the Fiji Women's Crisis Center coordinator.
The women's groups and feminist groups, we call it technology-facilitated violence against women and girls.
Shamima has worked for decades to advocate against gendered violence and knows what it's like to be attacked.
Because, you know, I've been in the job for nearly 40 years. And so I used to get it by letters and threats of raping me, killing me and all that. That has been an ongoing thing. It is hurtful. It is hurtful when it's really bad. But, you know, otherwise we just, because of the support system around us, we are able to get through with it.
Shamima, how have you seen gendered violence against women change over the years as we've moved into an era with easy access to technology?
Well, it's becoming, like, look, before this technology arrived and became so much more at our fingertips and so available and so common and so fast. We used to have, like, you know, Xeroxed photographs or something, photocopied photographs sent around and things like that, and threats of that. So they used to do it by slow mail and things like that. So, you know, it's just an extension of that. We see this as an extension of all forms of violence against women and girls that has been happening. So we see, the crisis center sees women and girls mostly, and children also. Sometimes they are also victims of this. So we see them, and it's getting like, now we've got a Online Safety Commission. We are getting laws that are going to address this, and there is a lot of education around it. So we're getting gradually the numbers are rising of people who either report to us or to the Online Commission or to the police. Often women don't want to actually go to the police because they think it will become very public after that. So they just want those photos taken down, you know, if he's already started putting up the photos and so on.
Fiji's Online Safety Commission says more than 60% of Fijian women experience online abuse. What can this look like?
Most cases that come to us, which is using this technology, is done to women and often from men, sometimes from other women, the bullying and so on. But, you know, like things like if a particular person, female person, was intimate with someone and decides to leave a relationship, then the person might have taken, when they were romantically aligned to each other, might have taken some compromising videos and so on. And nowadays people are in the habit of doing that. And then later on, when things go wrong, then they try to blackmail the person to come back, or, you know, like what we call sextorting. If you don't respond to me, you don't come and meet me here to have sex or something, I will release all these videos, those threats and intimidation and so on. So because of that, and in domestic violence situations, when the man, if she has decided to leave a bad relationship, immediately that person starts doing those kind of things, putting out pictures of her, threatening to put out pictures of her to get her back again or get some money out of her, blackmailing and things like that.
From your perspective, as someone who sees the impact of technology-facilitated violence a lot, how do you feel about the systems in place in Fiji to address it? Are they effective?
It's still early days. It takes a long time because even the Online Safety Commission is quite a new thing for us. And they're doing their best to, you know, to educate people around that. We also have got a committee on pornography. We have a committee on technology-facilitated violence and so on, and it's headed by senior members of the government. So all these things are being done. We've got laws against it, but it's being reviewed at the moment. It's very, very weak. It's being reviewed at the moment. And also, we're doing a gender analysis of that law, as well as the UNFPA has written a paper on that, reviewing that law. So we feel it is very weak. But the good thing is that people know that it is a crime and they are coming up to report, even if it is to find a way to get those pictures down. So it's a work in progress. And we, of course, lobby for, you know, the better laws, stronger laws against it, and you know, educating people about it, that you can go. Because the people we see, those people who become victims of this, they are suicidal, they are so ashamed, they're so embarrassed, they change their whole lifestyle, they don't want to go out, and, you know, they're on the brink of collapse when they come to us, and particularly women, because, you know, women's sexuality is often, you know, it often becomes a butt of jokes, and we're not supposed to show our sexuality and things like that. It's a very hidden kind of thing. So when this kind of pictures, this kind of bullying takes place, or revelation of things that might have happened in the past, they are hit very hard, and there you have to be very strong to be able to withstand that. You have to have a very good support system with the crisis center and other counseling centers offer, and the Online Commission is trying to offer.
Despite the huge toll that this has taken, Linda Tambuya is choosing to withstand it.
You know, we're seen as emotional. We're seen as, you know, that we would just cry or fade into silence. And it has worked a lot across the world. You know, women have resigned from cabinet, have resigned from their positions, have said, you know, enough, I cannot do this anymore. This is too much for me and my family. I'm out of here. So it has affected women in positions of influence and power. Turning that trauma into a lesson is difficult, but it is empowering as well. It's made me braver. I think it's made me more honest.
In February 2024, Linda's political party, the People's Alliance Party, decided not to expel her over the video. The party's general secretary, Sila Balawa, said it determined the video was not intentionally published or released by Ms. Tambuya, and she didn't intend to cause disrepute to the party.
I continued to do my work as a member of parliament. And I've just reminded myself, you know, that no matter how painful the scandal, my commitment to public service hasn't changed. This is why I'm here in the first place, is to serve our people and to continue to find ways to carry out my work.
Linda is pursuing legal action against two people in relation to the matter, and Fiji police are investigating how the video became public. Fiji's Online Safety Commission says it's also investigating the circulation of the video and is working with Fiji police. As Linda moves forward from this scandal, she says she'll continue to advocate for women in Fiji, and especially those who are victims of gendered violence.
I want to assure our women that, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all solution. You know, everyone's situation is different. Some women might want to stay quiet. Others might want to fight publicly. They are both valid choices. But I want you to know that, you know, that there are women like us that are fighting for women like you to be able to speak up.
As Linda's experience shows, what happened can be more than a personal invasion. It can be a political weapon, a private video, and a public dismissal. For Linda, it wasn't only the loss of a cabinet position, it was a loss of trust in a system she says failed to see her as a victim. Across the Pacific, women face similar attacks, whether it's leaked photos, threatening messages, or humiliation online. It's a form of violence that's driving women out of public life. But civil society is pushing back, demanding stronger laws, cultural change, and accountability. Because until women can lead without fear of digital violence, Pacific democracies will remain incomplete. Polytalk is hosted by me, Scott Waide. Our producer is Kunta Marie Crofts. Our supervising producer is Jordan Fennell. And our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu, Inga Stunzna. Next week on Polytalk, a holiday to the Pacific. White sandy beaches, clear blue water, and a coconut to drink as you listen to the sounds of the ocean. It's marketed as paradise, and it's a huge moneymaker.
When tourism is 70% of your economy and GDP, it affects every man, woman, and child. These revenues that are derived from the industry, they support local businesses, they support local families, they support agriculture and services, and their money flows really underpins employment.
But behind the picture-perfect Instagram posts, a real challenge is brewing. More tourists means more pollution, less resources for locals, and damage to the environment.
There was a complaint about an irritation experienced by people initially swimming in the lagoon. I could show how the lagoon was beginning to deteriorate.
The sentiment that we could see and hear from our communities was that it was enough, that our infrastructure and our way of life was being stretched. That raised the question about, you know, when is enough enough and can we handle the numbers that we were getting?
On Polytalk with me, Scott Waide. Tuesday, 9 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or wherever you get your podcasts.
Join me, Melissa Macon, for Nisha Daily, the afternoon edition, every Tuesday and Wednesday on ABC Radio Australia. I'll bring you the stories of the week from across the Pacific, and talk health and religion with experts in their field and individuals making a difference.
Search up ABC Nisha Daily Afternoon Edition to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.